That means we have to stand alone to contact the United States Justice Department, then we're going to do that. And I think that's what we see here in context to this incident. We see community folks saying it's not about a white man. It's not about a black man. It's not about gay. It's not about anybody, the rich or poor. It is about the fact that we have to stand up collectively together for rights so that all of us can benefit from a democracy that has safeguards. And I think, again, I'm real tough on elected officials because I see and have been a public advocate for over 10 years. I see white folks and black folks and gays and straights working together to fight for fairness and justice. They're not making over $90,000 and have a great health care benefits and posturing and not taking candidate positions and stepping up and taking the lead on controversial issues. They're marching in the streets. They're calling in the United States Justice Department. So my position in context to this is that this historic moment sends a clear message to those folks who are elected officials. Either you step up when things are controversial and you lead, or you need to be voted out of office. And that's not an AMA position. That's a Kelvin Hall position.
Amen, Brother Kelvin. Deborah Hall, with one more question. We had talked about this historic event that took place on December 19th of 2013. Was there any other seminal events that brought us to this point, to the December 19th and to the filing?
Yes. I'm going to cite two examples. First, the longstanding work of a bunch of volunteers with the Albina Ministry Alliance, Dr. Leroy Haynes and Dr. T. Allen Bethel, along with previous leaders who have led the Albina Ministry Alliance, have put for decades in work to stand up to make sure that folks receive justice during controversial moments in time and in history. And the monumental incidents that occurred with the loss of life in culmination with the historical social justice battle really pushed it over the edge and pushed these leaders who were standing on the shoulders of leaders from 20 years ago to say enough is enough. We need to bring in the federal courts. And if I can, some folks say, well, why is it that you have to bring in the federal courts? Well, let me explain to you. Again, I like to quote United States Justice Brennan. He said that such efforts of the federal court are to determine boundaries with the goal to protect basic rights from tyranny. The middle has to be filled up by the democratic process. That's the job of the citizens, public advocates, and public agencies. So we have a right to stand up, and we have a right to say enough is enough. We need to bring in the Justice Department to identify where the boundaries are, and as such, they will set the standard for creating a shared community in lieu of the lack of leadership in context to the elected officials.
So, Kelvin, I would agree with you. Well, not only do we have a right, but we have a duty to stand
yes.
up.
Yes.
Now, we talked about the fairness hearing that's going to take place. Can you give our listeners some idea of, if they wanted to participate, how can they do that?
Okay, that is a great, great question, because, you know, the majority of folks are not public advocates. People are fighting to take care of the basic essential food, clothing, and shelter, trying to make sure that the unfair water rates that we all have been burdened with, that we're able to pay. This is ridiculous, and I'm just going to do an ad. Vote for the PUD, because these water rates are causing people to it's just ridiculous. But in context to your question, what needs to happen is, when you prepare your presentation, what you want to do is, and I need to take advice myself, pull back the emotion, pull back the passion, pull back the pain, and do bullet points of what you want the judge to consider, and then go into your narrative, whether it's historic or whether you got some things that you want to say, because the judge needs to have ideas. Okay, so therefore, if you bullet point your ideas first, And then that way the judge can take a look at those, and then it'll be a matter of record to take a look at the remaining part of the narratives. So that would be the strategy that I would suggest. And remember, you only got 5 minutes. You just got 5 minutes. And so you don't want to be long-winded like me. You want to get to the point and then put a supporting narrative at the end.
It's my impression that organizations can also participate in this process. And so it seems to me that citizens are being encouraged to draft up a written statement that can be sent in advance, or you can do it in person. But again, if you do it in person, you should count on a 5-minute testimony.
That is correct. And if you're coming from an organization, then there'll be a statement from the organization. And so you want to make sure that you keep your words tight to 5 minutes, because there it's anticipated that it's going to be an overflow crowd. And so make sure that you're 5 minutes. And if not, then certainly the justice will let you know that you're over the 5 minutes.
Clarification also, Friday, January 31st was their first deadline for folks that were wanting to provide a written testimony. And what they're also encouraging is that is not your only opportunity. If you show up on February 19th to the courthouse, you also have an opportunity, time permitting, to give your testimony, and there will be a sign in there at that time.
That is correct. And some folks said, why the different approaches? A lot of folks are concerned about privacy issues. Granddaddy used to describe it as an iceberg. You can see the attack coming at the top of the iceberg, but it's the attack underneath the iceberg that's long, wide, that you don't see. So some people are afraid that they'll be profiled and targeted if they come and testify. So therefore, for those folks who have that concern, and that's okay, they were given the opportunity to submit written testimony anonymously. And for those other folks who wanted to present in person, then that was done in that context as well.
So again, for those listeners out there, if you've just joined us, this is a Coalition of Black Trade Unionists segment of Labor Radio here on cable. And our guest tonight is Kelvin Hall. He is a volunteer public advocate. And again, we are discussing the lawsuit against the Portland Police Bureau regarding use of force. And so I'd like for Kelvin to remind you of what those dates are if you choose to participate in the educational forums that are coming up.
Okay, I'm going to go a lot slower this time. Friday, February the 7th, 2014, St. John's, All Nations Church, Pastor Cliff Chappelle. Saturday, February 8th, 2 to 4, St. John's Community Center. Friday, February 12th, New Hope Baptist Church, Walter Hill. Thursday, February 13th, 6 to 8, Rosewood Community Center. And I would like to also give you the phone number if some of you who may not have had a pencil, or in fact I've talked too fast, you can contact the Albina Minister Alliance Coalition for Justice and Police Reform. The address is 4236 Northeast 8th, Portland, Oregon, 503-287-0261. That's 503-287-0261.
Thank you, Kelvin. Thank you very much. This is a very important and critical issue, and I thank the Albina Ministerial Alliance and all the other organizations that have worked on our behalf to bring this to the forefront and to give us an opportunity to perhaps get some, you know, police justice and have an opportunity to be involved in what that is going to be and what that is going to look like. This is a very exciting times in Portland, Oregon.
So, Kelvin, how about we... again, when you talked about the proposed changes, the good changes, how do you perceive those changes are going to, what kind of effect they're going to have on the public in general?
Well, I think that these changes are a good start. And I think that they will have rippling effects decades to come and for children yet unborn. However, it's not an end-sum game. We need to continue to see policy reform. We need to continue to see agitation. Because when you have opposing opposites, what happens is that there are no winners or losers. There's just good policy prescription that comes from that process. So therefore, to suggest that this is it, it's done, it's over. No, it's not over. We just have to continue to push to seek continued reform and improvement. And in doing so, we actually honor our department because we know that they are doing a great job and that it is the position of the community to say, hey, these are a set of improvements that can be of supportive to your efforts as you seek to keep us safe and prevent tyranny. So it's not an end game. It's a good beginning, but we have a lot more work that needs to get done.
No, in my discussions with you earlier in preparing for the show, you highlighted to me the importance or how the Albina Ministries were elevated to a level that litigants aren't normally elevated to. Can you give us a little more insight on that?
Sure, I'm going to respond in two contexts. If you take a look at the Black Panthers, they fought to create a lunch program for inner city poor families. They fought to create a voice when they saw inconsistencies within the judicial structure. But yet they were infiltrated and they were attacked by forces that didn't want to see folks stand and have an independent voice. So there are a lot of organizations and folks that historically have participated in these type of efforts, but have been, quite frankly, targeted and profiled. And so therefore, or the fear of being targeted and profiled, so therefore they don't participate. So when you have a group, a coalition of folks that said the greatest right is to fight for right, then that stands out in the folks who are charged with ensuring boundaries for our republic. And it gives a certain standard and credibility because there are no financial interests for these folks. They simply want to see things done so that it can improve future generations. And that unless there are courageous conversations and folks willing to stick their necks out, then those things don't happen. So therefore, the courage that these men and women from a broad group of organizations have exhibited over the decades gave and gives them standing in context to being able to say to the court, we are impartial and we are impassionate. We just want justice. And justice encompasses everyone. It just means that there's a few of us that has to stick our neck out. So I think it is that credibility that was part of the, along with the analytical patterns and practices of the issues that gave rise to the credibility for such a historic moment.
Can you enlighten me a little more on what role the AMA will be playing over the next 5 years when it comes to this lawsuit?
Yes, the agreement calls for a five-year implementation plan. And so AMA will stay true to form, which is to monitor policy when things aren't getting done, to participate in civil disobedience, whether that's rallying and marching or whether that's having a direct conversation. So they're going to stay as the overseers of this process. Let me just cite this example. I at the beginning of this show, I cited the framers and their wonderful work to create a republic. But you know, the one thing I didn't tell you is that while they created a wonderful republic, they all had slaves. So therefore, all systems need oversight. And when you don't have oversight, then human behavior and instinct takes over. And so therefore, they will continue to maintain that kind of level of oversight throughout the next 5 years and here on out. And that's true to form to their history and to the founders that in that organization that created it.
This is a very exciting time, because as we're sitting here, the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists in the first Monday of Black History Month, I'm really proud that we can talk about some of these issues that have come to fruition. Say, over the past 50 years when our country has fought and strived for civil rights, for everyone, equal civil rights, and for voting rights. And it's really exciting to me to see that these processes and these rules and our leaders that have come before us and who have sacrificed so much so that we have processes and procedures to air our grievances with our government. And I just want to implore upon everyone that there comes a time to sit and, you know, talk about things, and there come a time, you know, when to put some action to those thoughts and to those feelings that you have. And if our, you know, elected officials and our government don't know what's right about the system or don't know what's wrong about the system, there's no opportunity to make any corrections. And so, folks, this is our time. We're in our, 50th year from when Dr. King worked so hard to get the Civil Rights and the Voting Rights Act, and we cannot sit down now. This is our time to get some things done and to make sure that the correct thing happens by our, you know, police force and by our elected officials who manage that police force.
So I'd like to add a program note. Earlier you heard our guest who is an advocate for a vote on the PDU. I need you to understand that's the opinion of our guest this evening. What we would encourage you to do is to look. Be an informed voter, because sometimes you have to be careful. Sometimes things seem like they're a magic pill, a magic wand, and it's not so clear that the outcome of a favorable vote for the PDU will necessarily take care of all the ills that people feel that they're experiencing as far as the Water Bureau is concerned. So again, we're asking all of our listeners out there to be informed voters.
And I just want to echo that. I appreciate you. I stand corrected. I am not here to advertise any position either way. So I certainly agree with doing one's due diligence and on that particular issue. And I appreciate you, and I stand corrected. In context, too, I just wanted to give the website for the Albina Ministerial Alliance. It's albinaministerialcoalition.org. I'll say that slowly. Albinaministerialcoalition.org. Spelling albinaministerialcoalition.org.
Well, Kelvin, this has truly been enlightening, so we know a lot about the lawsuit that's coming up, but what we don't know is how you got involved. Why would you pick up this axe in order to tear down these walls?
Well, thank you for that question. I've been involved as a public advocate for over 20 years, but it's not the credentials or the activity. It goes back to my grandmother. My grandmother worked in a kitchen, and she wanted to move from the kitchen washing dishes to the laundry room. And a gentleman said to her, listen, if you could tell me how many bubbles are in this cup, then I'll give you the job. Well, she felt that was an insult. So she went out and she started to rally in front of the hotel. Well, it was a man, and it could have been any color, but a man threw a rock and hit her eye, and her eye would often twitch. And I remember I said, what happened? And then this was a story she told me. She said, I was protesting because we were standing up for rights, and a man threw a rock in my eye. And I said, well, Grandma, what happened after that? She said, well, I went to the hospital, and she said, but you know what? I said, what's that? She said, I went back to marching the next day. And I said, well, how could you go back to marching the next day? She said, because while the light went out in one, it got brighter in the other. And so therefore, if that doesn't fire you up to carry the torch, to participate when you see injustice, if that doesn't fire you up to say, I'm willing to take a stand when others are not willing to take a stand, if that doesn't fire you up, then you must be in a deep freeze. And so I made a commitment to my grandmother that I would participate and help out where I could. And so over the past 20 plus years, I have served as a director of a research and advocacy firm where I've helped families who were discriminated against as a public advocate, or whether it was other system issues that they needed assistance with. I've had a track record of working in public advocacy. I have a degree in criminal justice, and so therefore it just seemed like a natural fit to be of support, and I like it. And there's nothing. I remember one case in particular, the young lady by the name of Kendra James, who was shot by the police. The family contacted me and said, "Hey, we need some support. An advocate." And I said, "Wow, I'm just a public advocate. This is a pretty big case here." And so I contacted everybody. Folks were afraid, but the Albina Ministry Alliance said, "Hey, we'll stand with the family." But what was interesting about that was that they didn't say, and neither did I, say that cops are bad. That never came out. The only statement was justice needs to be served. And so therefore, I participated with coalitions that simply said, we want to improve our republic. And in doing so, we stand up for rights for others. So that's been my background and context, and why I volunteer as a public advocate. Because quite frankly, if you talk to civil rights attorneys, they'll tell you that a lot of civil rights attorneys are leaving the practice because of the high standard that you have to get in order to win a civil rights case. It's a pretty high bar. So volunteer public advocates are so critical in assisting folks to get through the first leg of the race in the event that they need to continue to run another relay. So I have a historical interest in reference to my family being advocates and standing up, and it has been a natural fit for my life as a community organizer and as someone that has been in the community for over 25 years.
Community organizer. Where have you heard that before?
Next stop, the White House. Next stop, White House.
Thank you so much for that humor. Kelvin, before we sign off, there is a question I have to ask you about the compliance community liaison position.
Yes.
Because, again, in reading the documents, it seems that there's something missing when it comes to that position. Can you kind of expand a little more on that?
Yeah, I agree with you. It really goes back to my earlier statement that I read, and if I can cite that again, there's only been one perfect agreement. It was carved out of stone on a mountaintop, and when it was done, it was called the Ten Commandments. Everything else written to govern human actions has needed to be reviewed, changed, and or debated in order to create a shared community. And I certainly liken that to this. We need to have citizens say very clearly that you want this position to directly report to the federal judge, period. And that that while we are extremely excited and very happy that we got what's called an enhanced amicus, which is, if you're like me, you didn't know what that meant until you encountered it. It means friend of the court. We want to make sure that that status that was given to AMA is also considered a status that's given to this position, because there needs to be a direct line to the federal judge. And we understand that there are legalities that prevent that because of the standpoint of being a litigant and being party to an ex parte to the lawsuit, and there are legal parameters. But we want folks to say that when there's a problem and when folks, our citizens, speak up and we don't feel we're being heard by our local elected officials, that we can go directly to the top. And this position is the position that will allow that to happen. And we need to have folks say that. So I would say that it needs to be strengthened so that it could speak directly to the judge, and not just monitor the overall process. Now, please don't take me out of context. I am excited that the process henceforth has been historic, but like all documents, one judge once said the African American judge on the Oregon Supreme Court said Thurgood Marshall, documents are to be a living document. They're not to be a document that's not a living document. So that's what I would like to see with this position. And furthermore, quite frankly, I would also like to see that the position be guaranteed the opportunity, if there is a question or conflict, that the city council can't have the authority to fire. That the only ones that should have that authority is the judge, and in partnership with the Albina Ministerial Alliance. Because, and the reason that I say that is because Frederick Douglass says power concedes nothing but a demand. Well, unless you let folks know that you can go above them to seek justice and to seek fairness, then a culture and climate is subject to return back to old familiar ways. So hopefully the citizens will push for that. And again, it's reflective of history. Our democracy it was founded on the fundamental principle that the courts are the highest level of boundaries in our land. And I think that this position is one that should report directly to them. Federal Judge Michael Simon set the February 18th fairness hearing to allow the community to weigh in on whether the agreement is fair, adequate, or reasonable. Whereas, as far as I'm concerned, the cup is never full. So let's all send that message and fight in unification. And I want to just add a footnote to that, and I've said it before, is that there are extremes on you know, one of the things that history tells us is that they send folks in to conquer and divide. Look, let's send a clear message. We want to see black folks out there. We want to see white folks out there. We want to see men. We want to see gays. We want to see straights. We want to see folks who are Christians, folks who are non-Christians. We want to see a clear message that the old taxes of yesterday will not divide this shared community, and that spread the wealth. And part of that spreading the wealth means allowing folks to have impact on public policy and this historic agreement.
And here's where we want to see all those folks that Kelvin just mentioned. The 4 planned educational meetings that are scheduled on behalf of the Albina Ministerial Alliance Coalition for Justice and Police Reform, excuse me. First meeting coming up February 7th, Friday, St. John All Nations Church of God in Christ. Second meeting Saturday, February 8th, 2 to 4 p.m., St. John's Community Center on North Central. Friday, February 12th, at New Hope Baptist Church. And Thursday, February 13th, from 6 until 8 p.m. at the Rosewood Community Center on Southeast Stark. And then following up with the hearing itself on Tuesday, February 19th, 9 o'clock a.m. at the Multnomah County Courthouse, address 1000 Southwest 3rd Avenue, Portland, Oregon. Show up a little early. Sign up to testify. And be there for yourself, be there for your people. Thank you.
And one last note on the hearings that are going to take place. Again, we encourage you to prepare a statement and that you stay within the 5-minute deadline, because if you don't, what it means is that others who have come with a prepared statement may not be able to get their voices and opinions heard. So again, thank you very much. I'd like to extend a huge thank you to Kelvin Hall.
It's an honor. It's an honor. I'm glad to be here.
And to Deborah Hall.
The Halls took over today.
We took over. Oh. Like Seattle.
So again, once again, I'd like to thank you for joining us tonight with the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists, the labor section of KBOO Radio. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
To you, the 9-to-5er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Join KABU at the Clinton Street Theater Tuesday, February 11th, 2014 at 7 p.m. for our monthly KABU movie night.
Manda! Manda!
To celebrate the 24th anniversary of Nelson Mandela's release from prison in South Africa, KABU's Africa Oye will present the powerful documentary film A Mandala, A Revolution in Four-Part Harmony. Preceding the film will be a special short talk on the power of music in African society by Baba Wage Jakete, renowned artist and storyteller from Mali. That's Tuesday, February 11th at 7 p.m., Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events. Join KABU at the Clinton Street Theater Tuesday, February 11th, 2014 at 7.
Hi, Love Jones here, DJ and producer for La Contessa de la Luna, late night host of The Confessional. I want to invite you to join her and a cast of tens to the Clinton Street Theater pre-Valentine's Day live show and extravaganza plus movie. Get ready for Thursday, February 13th when she takes over the Clinton Street Theater for a live show featuring sing-alongs, talk like Christopher Walken contest, prizes, raffles, audience confessions, and a live performance by La Contessa de la Luna, featuring the KBOO dancers. The live show is followed by the film Dogma, featuring George Carlin and Matt Damon. That's triple the entertainment for one ticket, and all proceeds benefit your community radio station, KBOO. That's La Contessa and Friends live on stage Thursday, February 13th, starting at 7 p.m. Tickets on sale now at brownpapertickets.com. Just search for KBOO. See?
They create the beef. They create the desire. They foster it and put that frequency inside of hip-hop.
KABU is proud to co-sponsor the Portland Youth Summit this weekend, February 7th to 9th. The weekend features a youth talent showcase, a talk by Nuri Muhammad, workshops on hip-hop culture, and a performance Saturday night with Jasiri X, Mike Crenshaw, Ancient Soul, and Black Butterfly at the Blazers Boys and Girls Club. More information about the Portland Youth Summit can be found on the KABU website, kboo.fm, on the right-hand side under Community Events.
Are your leaders, heaters on the Adam's apple? Keep quiet, we're selling this fear, no weak vibe, we defy.